This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for lectures, features, and radio shows. And now, here's Coy Barefoot.
Dan Olmsted is a former UPI reporter, author of the Age of Autism series, one of the nation's leading investigative reporters who has written about this now worldwide epidemic of autism, which regular listeners to this program will know has certainly touched my family. My six-year-old son was diagnosed when he was two, and Dan has been one of the folks in the media that I have looked to for the very latest in information and news when it comes to trying to understand what the hell's going on with our children. Dan joins us on the phone. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Coy. I wish it were 75 again today up here, but it's not bad. So,
and you're in Northern Virginia, right?
I'm in Falls Church City.
That's
yes,
right.
I am.
That's right. Dan, yeah. Remind folks, just by way of review, how you started writing about autism. You were a UPI reporter, and how did this first come across your desk?
It was kind of an indirect thing where I was spending quite a bit of time investigating an anti-malaria drug that the CDC recommended that had some pretty bad side effects, which, believe it or not, included suicide and even homicide. And as I looked into that and kind of questioned why the CDC was so reluctant to look at the possible side effects and the pros and cons, I became more aware that a lot of parents were concerned about whether this huge increase in autism was related to vaccines, which, of course, the CDC is the government agency that recommends those and also keeps tabs on the autism rate and the safety of vaccines and that sort of thing. And so the more I looked, the more, I guess I have to say, suspicious I got that we weren't getting the full story here. And I just talked to so many parents and some pediatricians and scientists who really, I thought, made a pretty compelling case that in at least in some cases, there was a pretty clear link between getting a vaccine and some of these regressive cases of autism. And I just kind of bit that apple, and I've been on it ever since.
We're talking with Dan Olmsted, and if you can share with us very quickly, well, just briefly, and then we'll go on to some of the more current issues, some of the things in your years of research about autism that that made headlines and some of the surprises that you came across in your research.
Well, I'd say probably the one that has gotten the most attention is whether the autism rate is the same among never-vaccinated kids in this country as it is in kids who've had the full slate of vaccinations, which, as you know, have increased quite a bit in the last 20 years, right along with the autism rate. And since I live here in Washington, it was easy for me to drive up to Amish country in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and I tried to find cases of autism in that group, knowing that they had at least a lower vaccination rate and also less exposure to a bunch of other things. So, you know, who knows what might be going on. But I really was unable to turn up the kind of epidemic level of autism that we're seeing in the rest of the population. And so I wrote about that, and, that created some discussion. It created, a question of why the federal government has never looked at the autism rate in kids like that. Kids, don't have to be Amish, but anywhere who have not been vaccinated at all, to try to make this comparison very clear and convincing, so that if there's no connection, we can move on. And so that was one thing. Another thing I would say is I tried to look back at the very earliest cases, which have really been kind of neglected, that were reported in 1943 at Johns Hopkins for the very first time, and I believe that you can see some links there in the first families who were described in the medical literature. You can see that they had connections that brought them into contact with mercury, particularly ethyl mercury, which is a very toxic kind that was used in fungicides and vaccines, starting right about the time these first cases occurred. And so I think we see a very troubling pattern that needs to be investigated more.
And as far as that, we're talking with reporter Dan Olmsted and soon to be author. We'll talk about that. As far as the connection between vaccines and autism, for those folks who are very new to this conversation, the suggested link and the hypothesis that has convinced not a few scientists is that this preservative, this ethyl mercury preservative that was used in vaccines for generations, the poison that they put in vaccines to kill other things to protect the vaccines, is what has built up in these kids. And as you increase the number of vaccines, which greatly increased in the late 80s and early 90s, as you increase the number of shots kids get, then you, by default, you're increasing the amount of ethyl mercury that's going into their bodies. And that then is the hypothesis that we're seeing. Some kids can flush that out, but there's a subset of the population that has this the inability, an efflux disorder, if you will, to flush out these heavy metals from their bodies.
Well, that's right. And, you know, vaccines, unfortunately, are not the only source of mercury. In fact, they've been phasing it out, at least out of most vaccines in the last few years. But, you know, we've got this economic miracle, so-called, going on in China where you've got a new coal-fired plant coming online practically every day, and you've got this giant plume floating across over to the West Coast. And not everybody knows this, but in addition to these greenhouse gases and the global warming concerns, coal pollution, one of the key ingredients there is mercury. And so that's how you get the, you know, that and the other sources of mercury pollution is how you get the mercury in the fish, and you get the mercury in the lakes and streams, and you get it in the rain. And I worry that we have a broader toxic problem here that, in a sense, to use a kind of a tired metaphor, but these kids with autism are kind of the canaries in the coal mine who are telling us something very troubling about what we're doing to ourselves, and you know, that's a bad news story. But the good news is that if it is environmental, if we're doing it to ourselves, we could stop it.
Dan Olmsted is a former UPI reporter and now the editor online at ageofautism.com. Dan, tell us about this new website, which truly is a clearinghouse for all the very latest information about autism.
Well, yeah, when I left UPI, I was contacted by several folks in the, I guess you'd call it the biomedical community, the people who think that, you know, autism is treatable because it is an environmental illness. And they suggested that I work with them to create ageofautism.com, which really grew out of a previous website called Rescue Post, which is Generation Rescue, which is a terrific group that tries to help newly diagnosed kids and families, you know, help their kids as fast as possible. And so we've just, you know, kind of gone at it tooth and nail, and we've got a lot of interesting writers, and we're pretty broad in terms of what we're willing to look at and what we're talking about, vaccines and the epidemic and the science and, you know, treatment, all those kinds of things. And yeah, we seem to have a pretty good and growing audience, so I'm really happy about that.
And that's online at ageofautism.com. Dan, tell us about the book. What's the latest on that?
Well, Corey, you've kind of been trying to help me over the last couple of years, and I appreciate it. And I think I'm close to being able to put together a book that really, I guess you would call it the natural history of mercury poisoning. I mean, mercury has been a problem in this world for a long time. I mean, we're going back to the Middle Ages when it was used in alchemy, and then when medical science first tried to treat some of the illnesses back then, mercury was used as an antibiotic, believe it or not. And, you know, I think there's kind of a hidden history that can be told there, which includes things like acridinia or pink disease, when kids got this very strange illness that turned out to be due to teething powders that had mercury. And so there's a long trail of tears here in terms of horrible consequences that I think starts a long time ago and leads right up through autism. And I think if the whole story can be told, know, the impact and the significance of it, and hopefully the way out of it, can become clearer.
And I think it's very important work because, and folks that are listening really need to understand this key point, that mercury poisoning goes way beyond the possibility of vaccines. And as you point out, in coal-burning power plants, you know, studies have shown that kids who are growing up downwind of a coal-burning power plant, or what is it, Dan, 4 times more likely to have autism?
Yeah, clearly there's a statistically significant increase in autism when you get close to mercury pollution in the air, and I think there's a new study coming out that I'm aware of that's going to make that point more strongly. So that's very disturbing.
Yeah, it really is, and it's something I think that we need to understand more of, because you know it took generations for people to realize that, oh, lead is not a good thing. Lead is, we don't want that in our paint. We don't need that in our gasoline. We need to get it out as quickly as possible. It's poisoning our kids. And yet we tell people not to eat the fish, but that type of mercury in fish is compared to the mercury that's in vaccines or that you're getting in pollution is nothing. And I think it's important that we take this really this step in learning as a society and understand that this mercury poisoning is infinitely more dangerous to our children than lead ever was.
Well, that's right. And, you know, this is not about being anti-vaccine or any such thing. I think it's about trying to figure out how to protect our kids and ourselves from these infectious diseases without triggering this whole new wave of disorders that are, you know, in their own way just as bad or worse. And so it's a balancing act. It's a question of being open-minded and, you know, fair to every point of view, but doing something when we have enough evidence to do so. And I think we have that evidence.
Dan Olmsted is a former UPI reporter. He's now the editor online at ageofautism.com. Dan, what is the very latest of the research and the articles that have come across your desk? Help us understand what's going on.
Well, one thing that is interesting is that the autism rate is continuing to climb very rapidly. There's California numbers that are widely viewed as very reliable, where they look only at the what they call full syndrome cases, or the kids who are, you know, unmistakably, you know, affected by the classic form of autism. And even though mercury has been phased out of several of the childhood vaccines, the rate's still going up. And so I should say, in fairness, some people think that's strongly suggestive that the mercury in vaccines was not a factor. I don't think it means that, partly because of this environmental pollution, partly because vaccines themselves may be playing some role in terms of live viruses, and partly because the flu shot still has mercury, almost all of them, and they've increasingly recommended flu shots for pregnant women. My God, with mercury going straight into the fetus, we know that it accumulates there. And now 6-month-old infants and older are recommended for this flu shot. So we're still, you know, got mercury coming at us from I'm afraid, too many directions. And I think that is just terrible.
And I want to just repeat something you said in case somebody might have missed it, that there is still 25 micrograms of ethyl mercury, which is a poison that is in most every single flu shot that's out there that's on the market. And how they recommend that pregnant women and babies should get these shots is beyond me. It is baffling, and I think it's criminal.
I would agree with you, Coy. And I'll tell you one thing that I heard recently, and I haven't mentioned it before, but I'll mention it here, is that a pediatrician who actually practices in Virginia and who has a large caseload of autistic kids, she told me that the youngest cases that she's now seeing, she calls them flu shot kids, because she can usually look at their medical records and see that the mother got the flu shot with mercury, they got it very early at 6 months, they got it at 1 year with some of these live virus shots. And that, this is not scientific, you know, hold the phone, don't kill me, but this is the kind of thing I hear that makes me very, very concerned that this could explain why we're not seeing a reduction in cases. And why in God's name we would keep that mercury in there is, as you say, is just baffling.
And why is it that it's in there? I mean, somebody that's listening who doesn't know much about this, and it's what I thought when I first started doing this research myself, when we found out that our son was sick, I looked to just, you know, you just sit down and you think, well, wait a minute. There's a poison in our medicine, and they won't even allow you to put it in dog medicine.
Right.
But yet they allow you to put it in flu shots that they then, you know, scream at you to get injected with. I'm baffled why the government has never done anything about this.
Well, I know, especially since it was the government that, you know, rather urgently recommended in 1999 that manufacturers phase it out. I mean, the technical reason that it's in any vaccine or ever was is because if you have a multi-dose vial, which is cheaper to have, then you're going to be sticking a needle in and out of it to give the kids the shot, and that creates an opportunity for bacteria to get into the vaccine, and that can kill you if, you know, the next kid gets some bacteria in him. So that's why it started out, but it began, as I say, you know, in the 20s and 30s, long before we had the sophisticated understanding of this. And, you know, the fact that it remains in a very commonly used, increasingly used vaccine like the flu shot, at the same time that we're trying to get it out of everything else, including our power plants and our fish and you know, other vaccines. I just don't know.
Dan Olmstead is a former UPI reporter. He's now the editor online at ageofautism.com. Dan, we've run out of time as usual. I'm so sorry, but let's talk again soon.
It's a pleasure, Coy, and you're doing the Lord's work here. I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Dan. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show is on the air Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. Join in on the show by calling 434-977-1070 or feel free to leave a comment on the show at cvillepodcast.com. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.